Welcome to the Healing for Male Survivors podcast. This is a podcast for male survivors of sexual abuse and assault, whether as a child or as an adult. Know that you are not alone and the abuse was not your fault. My name is Mike Chapman. I'm a certified recovery life coach and also a survivor. Let's find hope and healing together. And welcome to the Healing for Male Survivors podcast. This is Mike Chapman. And if you would like to join us live, please find all the information on how to do so on my website, polarlifeconsulting.com/live. And we have a live audience with us with our special guest today, Nathan Spiteri. And Nathan is an actor, filmmaker, and child sexual abuse activist. After 25 years of hiding the secret of his sexual abuse, beginning when he was 8, Nathan broke his silence and worked to overcome his childhood pain, played out through adolescence and adulthood with sexual identity struggles, drug addiction, and destructive behavior. His story is chronicled in his powerful memoir, Toy Cars, One Man's Journey from Trauma to Triumph. And for those of us who are here live, feel free to add your questions to the Q&A section. You can stay as anonymous as you would like. We will only state your name if you manually type it in along with your question. So to start things off, we begin with our segment, Four Questions. Now it's time for Four Questions, that part of the podcast when we get to know our guest a bit better by asking a few questions. Let's go. So, Nathan, what is your favorite food memory?
I think my favorite food memory is just being able to go back to Australia now, I live here in the States, obviously. So being able to go back to Australia and just eat my mum's food. My mum's a fantastic cook, so I love going back to Australia and just eating her food. She makes a lot of pastas and roasts and a lot of desserts, a lot of really good desserts and cakes and pastries and stuff like that. So I don't eat it when I'm here. It's only when I go back to Australia. So it's always really nice to go back and eat that food.
Now, I remember from your book, you mentioned that she's from Malta area. Yeah. So growing up in that region, south of Italy, north of Africa, what kind of food influences did she have and what does she tend to cook? More Italian or a whole mishmash or what?
Bit of a mishmash, but more Italian. I think the food is very influenced by Italian. The main dish in Malta is rabbit. So she makes a lot of rabbit dishes and rabbit stew and stuff. So yeah, it's a bit of a mishmash, but it is more on the pasta Italian side of food.
So what's your absolutely favorite dish that she has made?
She makes an amazing lasagna. She makes an amazing ravioli. She does all the pasta on her own from the start. She'll make all the pasta sheets. She'll make everything. So yeah, I think
she rolls out the pasta by hand. Yes, it sounds like that's a lot of work. My goodness,
it's a lot of work, but she loves it, and bless her, she's good at it.
Yeah, so that's wonderful. So, what is your favorite Christmas or holiday memory?
Just being a kid, and we have a beach house, so the whole family would just go to the beach and over Christmas because it's summertime in Australia. I remember the night before, there's a bunch of us kids all sleeping out and in the living room waiting for Santa. And at 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, one of our parents or our uncle would wake up and eat the carrots and drink the milk and stuff like that. And then, you know, in the mornings, we'd get up and we'd go to the beach first thing. Then we'd go home and do the, you know, the presents and have a big Christmas lunch. And then we'll go back to the beach. So it's just the simplicity of Christmas in Australia is, you know, it's hot, it's summer, it's beachy, so it's great.
Right. Well, that's wonderful. And what is your favorite church or house of worship memory?
I think my favorite memory is just being able to go there during Mass and get away from life, just to be able to sit there in silence and just forget about everything and be in the moment and not have to worry about the outside world and what's going on. It was always, you know, that hour at Mass was always a time just to get away from the world and get away from my struggles and get away from everything going on in my head and just to let it go for that hour.
Yes, I hear that a lot, that church, going to worship services, yeah, it gets you out of your head at least 1 hour a week. And it's actually very healthy to think about something other than yourself and your worries and your troubles. So yeah, that's fascinating, but that's very common to find that relief, really, that yeah, you don't have to think about stuff and you can just focus on the service and taking it all in. So that's wonderful. So what is your favorite scripture or any inspirational quote that has helped you on your spiritual journey, and what about it speaks to you?
The one that really resonated with me was Psalm 35, which is "Thou too shall pass." And that the reason why that resonated with me was because, you know, everything I've been through and the abuse and the trauma, and that will pass. That too shall pass. And it's up to me to make the best of my life and to make the most of it. So I can either sit in that trauma and sit in that dark place, or I can move forward with my life and let that pass, let that be done, let that be in the rearview mirror.
Right. And you have used your story to help others by sharing it. And you've got a wonderful story to tell, and you've written a book including your story. So briefly, I mean, don't want you to read all of your entire book, but let's hear about your story, whatever you'd like to share. I know some people's stories bounce around, and I've only read part of your book. I'm around chapter 20 now, so I haven't gotten all the way to the end. Yes, it's very fascinating, your journey. So, and then from there, we'll talk about your current healing journey and what you're doing these days.
I obviously was born in Australia, grew up in Canberra, which is a capital city, which is about 3 hour drive south of Sydney. I kind of feel like during the summer, the whole town would just go to the local swimming pool. So me and my sister would ride our bikes down there, and we'd done it plenty of times before. This one day, my sister left halfway through the afternoon. She went off with her friends, and that was fine because I'd ridden my bike home plenty of times on my own. And this one day, at the end of the day, I was literally the last person there at the pool. This man followed me into the change rooms, and he raped me in the shower. First thing he said to me was that if I tell anyone, he'll kill me and kill my family. So I didn't tell a soul. I didn't tell a soul for 25 years. And in this relationship with this man, which went on for about 6 years, it started out very rough and violent. And he would, you know, throw me against the wall and choke me out and make me pee my pants and beat me up and hit me and punch me and slap me and, you know, rape me very violently. But then through his grooming and his manipulation, it turned into a Stockholm syndrome type relationship where I felt love for him, to the point where I'd ride my bike down to his house and wait for him outside to get home. And that's when he would be violent with me again, because I was waiting for him. He abandoned me, or he disappeared out of my life after those 5-6 years. And then I, you know, for a year or two, I questioned who I was, what I was, where I belong in the world, who do I belong with? Am I gay? Am I straight? At 15 years old, I would ride my bike to cruise lounges and sex clubs and gay clubs in the suburb next to mine, which was an industrial estate. I would sneak into these places. I would let these men abuse me and rape me again. And then I would turn around and beat them up and bash them and rob them. And that was my fuck you to the world, my way of getting my power back, my way of feeling alive. That went on for quite a few years as well. And as a result of that, I fell in with the wrong crowd, doing drugs, you know, selling my body for sex, shooting heroin, smoking crack, tried killing myself, almost killed someone else. So, you know, that was a big part of my life for a very long time. I was then invited to New York to study and become an actor. I came to New York thinking I could get away from that life and start over and start fresh, but it's New York City, and you know, you can get what you want, when you want, how you want it, twice as cheap as anywhere else, and fell back into it. And everything I did before, the drugs, the sex, the violence, to the point where I almost killed myself again. And I knew it was now or never. I knew it was time. Everyone was abandoning me. Everyone didn't want to be my friend anymore. And I finally was able to talk to my best friend and ask her to meet me one last time, because she was done with me too. She met with me at a cafe. I still couldn't get the words out, but then she finally, you know, she was about to stand up and leave, and I grabbed her and I said, I was raped as a kid. And that was the first time I ever said those words. She helped me find a therapist. Through therapy, I did group therapy, rehab, AA, Narcotics, Sex Anonymous. And the past 12, 13 years of my healing journey have been me kind of understanding my relationship with this man, understanding my relationship with my parents, with friends, with lovers, finding peace, finding forgiveness for myself, for what I, you know, what was put on me and what I put on to others, for the hurt I put onto others, and understanding that it wasn't my fault, which was a big part of my healing journey, was understanding it wasn't my fault. And that's where a big weight fell off me. And one of the biggest things was just owning who I am, owning my shit, owning the good, the bad, the ugly, owning all of it. Because once I owned all of that, that allowed me to get my power back. That allowed me to move forward. That allowed me some kind of peace, some kind of closure, some kind of understanding of what I went through.
Right. I've gotten through a lot of your book. It's interesting. Yeah, you mentioned the Stockholm Syndrome. But after the incidents with the what you call the man, which I kind of appreciate it, I know in the No Longer Ashamed podcast, Daniel had come on to talk about using terms other than my abuser. And in the book, you just talk about the man, which I appreciate. Now, you started seeking out those behaviors, kind of stalking him to see when he was there, when he was not, and actually seeking that out. And I think that's a very normal behavior. Part of the grooming, they groom you to believe, and like you said, brainwash you into believing that you want this and that it's something you gave permission for, that you convincing you that, yeah, you like this and that it's special or whatever. And that's also very common. I noticed in later chapters, you talk about frequenting sex clubs and so forth. And after acting out with whoever you would hook up there, you would end up violently hitting them and then leaving, just like punching them, whatever. And that seemed to be a pattern with you. Did you ever figure out what was behind that? Why did you just knock them out or push them around, get a little bit violent after everything was over and then leave? Did you ever find out what was behind that?
Because I, you know, it wasn't these men that I was hitting. It wasn't these men that I was acting out on. It was on my abuser for abandoning me, for just disappearing out of my life because I was so lost and confused. And he told me he loved me and we were going to be together forever and you know, all of that stuff. So I had so much anger and hatred inside of myself.
Right.
For myself, because of what he said to me through his grooming manipulation, imposter syndrome, self-sabotage. I don't deserve love. I don't deserve happiness. I deserve to fail. I deserve to, you know, to be in the gutter and to be a piece of shit. I, you know, that's what I deserved and that's who I was. So I acted on that. And that was all I knew for a very long time. And acting out with these men and beating these men up and hitting them and robbing them and doing what I was doing was the only way I was able to feel that again and feel those emotions and feel that's the way the man made me feel.
Right.
You know, the first 9 years of my sexual life, from 8 to 17, I was being abused and raped by men and beaten up and this, that, and the other. First time I had sex with a woman was when I was 17. So, you know, for a very long time, for those 9 years, that was all I knew and that was all I had in my life. So I had to act out on that. And again, that's what made me feel alive. That's what made me feel or gave me back my power.
Right. Yeah. They became a proxy for the man and all your feelings for towards the man.
Exactly.
So, yeah, is a way to get out all of that. And it kept you alive and it gave you that outlet, at least. Not that it was terribly healthy, but it got you through it. For sure. Now, in New York, you told your friend about your story. When was the first time you told your story publicly in any kind of public forum, and how did that come about?
I went back to Australia in 2018. My sister's husband passed away. He had cancer, so he died. I went back for the funeral, and I was back home for 2 to 3 weeks. A very good friend of mine is a journalist for one of the major newspapers in Australia. And this was a time when there was a big kind of royal commission on abuse in the Catholic Church, abuse in the Boy Scouts, you know, a lot of that in these organizations or in these institutions, sexual abuse towards boys and young boys and girls. So the Prime Minister of Australia was doing this big public apology to all victims and trying to help them find some peace and you know, get closure and move forward. So my friend who was a journalist said, "Nathan, can I do a story on you?" And I was like, "Oh, I don't know. I don't know if I want this to come out." But then I thought, you know what? Yeah, I know, because this is going to help me in my healing, but it could help so many other people. And I remember speaking to my parents about it, speaking to my mom, and mom said, well, if it happens, can you keep it anonymous? Do you have to put your name in a photo? And I spoke to my friend, the journalist, and she said, well, we have to, because otherwise it's anonymous made up article that would have no credit. But because it's about you, it's about this young boy who grew up in this small town and who is now living in New York and working as an actor and a writer and a producer, it adds so much more credit to it, because it just shows what one can overcome. So that's, it came out Halloween weekend in Australia, October 31st, and it just kind of grew from there.
Wow. I know, I remember hearing about the commission when all the information about Hillsong, which is also based in Australia, came out. And I think, yeah, they were probably similarly investigated. And I think it was a Boy Scout incident that was some of the early evidence in that case as well. And then it snowballed, and there's even more that have been released. Yeah. Now, that eventually led you to writing the book, which we'll have the links to the show notes. And when you wrote the book, what was the hardest part about writing that book? And what was the best part of writing that book?
That's a great question. No one has ever asked me that. I think the only times that I cried in writing that book, if I can remember correctly, the hardest part was when I was writing about my family, my parents and my siblings. Right. Writing about the abuse and what was done to me, I think because I'd written about it so many times in therapy that it wasn't the first time, that it wasn't, you know, it didn't trigger me so much. But writing about my family and my parents and how sweet and good they are and this, that, and the other, that's what got me. That's what broke my heart. Best part was the last few chapters, because obviously you've got the four main chapters: before him, with him, after him, today. I think the best part was writing the today part and writing about how far I've come and what I've actually learned now and what I want to give back to the world. That was, I think that was the best part. Was the first three quarters of the book was tough and hard, and it was very dark and deep and, you know, all of that stuff. Right. But the last quarter was just me about what I've learned, where I am today, what I'm doing today, and my healing journey. And I think that was the best part, because it made me realize just how, I guess, how far I have come and how much I have learned and how much I have evolved and grown and developed as a person.
Now, you mentioned talking about your family. Were you able to contact family and friends when writing the book and getting their perspective on the book?
Yeah, well, when I wrote the book, that was probably 2 years after the article came out, I think, or about a year and a half. Article came out in 2018. It was mid-2019 that the publishing house reached out to me, asking me to write my memoir. Then I started writing it towards the beginning of 2020. So it was about a year, a little over a year. So in that time, my family obviously found out, my family knew, my friends knew, everyone kind of knew about my story now because it was out there to the world. So my family were very, I asked my friends a ton of questions, and they were all very responsive and all very helpful. And, you know, we had a laugh about a few things and, you know, a bit of a cry about a few other things, but it was very cathartic and therapeutic in writing it on my own, but also in speaking to family and friends and ex-girlfriends and lovers and whatnot about everything else.
Right. And getting their perspective on your story as well, probably put a new light on things.
Absolutely. Because there's my side, there's their side, and then there's the truth. And I think their side was more the truth. So it was great to get their side of it and write that, because obviously it was so long ago. And, you know, a lot of these things that happened were, I was so messed up on drugs or depressed or wherever I was. So my memory of it was not the greatest. So to be able to speak to these people, I spoke to drug dealers, I spoke to people I partied with, I spoke to everyone and anyone that I could.
Oh, fascinating. Listening to your book, I've been listening to the audio version. You mentioned the man. Whatever happened to him? I haven't gotten that far in the story, that he somehow vanished, and then there was family members who came and you saw them and basically explained that you were not going to see him again. Did you ever find out what happened to him?
I don't know exactly because his family didn't tell me and I was so young at that time, but I know he's dead now. I know he's dead now. Mm-hmm. He got early onset Alzheimer's and dementia and died. I was told that there was more than one kid or more than me. And it normally is that way. If it happens to one, there's normally a lot of kids. And when they explained to me that you're never going to see him again, I never did see him again. So I'm not sure if he got in trouble with the police or his family found out and then he had to go away or he just disappeared or he left town. But that's what I was told. And because my mom, yes, she was from Malta, but my mom moved to Australia when she was like 2 years old. And mom grew up in this town. So the way I found out, and one of the reasons how I found out about him and his name was, I had a big article come out about me in a newspaper in Australia, like, let's just say like the New York Times, the Sydney Morning Herald, which is one of the biggest papers there. My mom and her friends got together because there was always talk of some men in the town who did no good things or who were not nice and or who were pedophiles. So my mum and her friends put their heads together and kind of worked out who it was, where he lived, what he looked like, and you know, with my help, and kind of worked out, oh my God, that's this guy, that's his name, this is who he is, and he's now dead. So I never saw him after that. I never saw him after he disappeared, after I was 12 years old, and which is kind of hard because people say, well, now you have closure, but not really. Yes, he's gone. Yes, he's dead. But I don't really have the closure that I want or I need.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Wow. Was that part of your book? Did you add that to the book?
It's all in the book at the end. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. All right. More to come. I'm not there yet. Now, we do have some questions from the audience. Dan Carlson says, I'm impressed with your TED Talk, mate. I'm glad to be here to hear you. And yes, you did a TED Talk recently. I know, talking about your story. So what happened? What's the story behind you getting on TED Talk? Were you invited or did you apply or how does that even work?
Yeah, I had a lot of friends telling me that I should be doing a TED Talk. I need to do a TED Talk. So I was introduced to this coach and he was an amazing man. And he and I, you know, had a few meetings about it and who I am. And I told him my story. He read my book and he was like, Nathan, you need to do this. You really need to do this TED Talk because it could be super powerful and you could really help thousands of people. So I wrote the TED Talk. I wrote the script first, or I wrote the TED Talk, and then he kind of come in and helped me fine tune it, get it to where it needs to be. And then we applied. We applied to about 60 TED Talks, and I got one. It was in Dallas, and I did it. And you know, if I can say so myself, I nailed it. I did really well with it. And it's all about how I broke up with my abuser. And how I broke up with the shame, the anger, the toxic masculinity, the ego, the drugs, and you know, about, and then talking about education and moving forward and stuff like that. So it went very, very well, and I'm really glad I had that experience, and I'm glad it's out there for the world to see. And you know, I hope that the listener can, and the person who watches it can learn from it and get some healing from it. And what I really like about it the most is that a lot of people who watch it will reach out and say, Nathan, I was never abused. I've never been sexually abused. But what you spoke about and breaking up with ego and shame and anger and hatred and toxic masculinity related to me so much that I've taken on board what you've said. And it's the same with the book. I've had so many females reach out to me saying, Nathan, I've never been through anything you've been through. I've never been abused or sexually abused. But because of your book, the way I now speak to my children, the way I speak to my husband, my partner, what I want in a partner has completely changed because of your book. And that's what I love the most, is that I can, you know, as much as I can impact survivors, I can impact people from all walks of life as well. And that's what I really enjoy about this.
Yes, definitely. And I know you have this book and the audio book and so forth. And what else is going on with your story? It sounds like you've got more in line than just having your book published.
Yeah, I've been starting to do a lot of talks, a lot of keynotes, which has been great. And I really enjoy, and going to universities or going to organizations or whatever the situation, or charity events or whatnot. So doing that, which I'm really starting to enjoy. But through the the memoir, and through the TED Talk, I was asked to do a documentary on my story, which I've done. It is now doing the festival circuit, and you know, we have high hopes with it. It's pretty powerful, and you know, we're hoping to get it into the Oscars in the short film documentary category. It's, you know, that has to be under 40 minutes to qualify. Our documentary is 39 minutes, so it gets there. And so that's now doing the festival circuit. I just sent you the trailer for it, which I'm excited by. And
can
now,
I share that link in the show notes as well, Nathan?
Of course, please. The memoir is now being turned into a movie. The script has been written. It's with producers, with line producer, and we're really getting the team together. And what I really enjoy and find fascinating is that, or I'll meet with producers and people who are interested in being a part of it, and I tell them my story, and the first thing they say is, I need to be a part of this, or I want to be a part of this. I want to help. I want to do what I can. I'll reduce my rates. You can pay me on the back end. But literally everyone who I've spoken to, producers about it, are like, yep, I'm in. I want to do this. I had one producer who said her brother was raped as a kid, and it really messed him up, and he is still really messed up. So she has a really big interest in it and wants to be a part of it. So we know that, you know, if this movie is done right, it could really have a huge impact in the world and create a lot of change and be super successful. So there's a lot of things going on, you know, from something so bad that has happened to me. And this is all stuff I never wanted to do. The book, the memoir, you know, the documentary, right, the TED Talk, the movie. This is all stuff I never wanted to do. But through my healing journey and understanding the impact I can have on people, the growth I can have for myself, especially more importantly, you know, from something so bad to now something amazing has come about that. So I, you know, it's definitely been a journey, and it's been a tough one. And, you know, like I said, you know, suicidal ideations and wanting to kill myself and hurting a lot of people and hurting myself, to now coming out the other side of it and understanding who I am and understanding my life, to now be able to move forward and to really kind of hopefully have an impact on the world.
Right. Where did you go from telling your friend, telling your therapist, getting help, to I want to share this publicly? How did you make that leap?
My therapist would tell me, ask me all these questions. And at that time, I wasn't able to talk about it. So my therapist would write down a bunch of questions for me. I would go home and write the answers. And we'd talk about it the next week. And I realized I had pages upon pages upon pages of my story. And I showed it to my best friend. And even my therapist said, Nathan, you need to do something with this. You could change the world with this. And then it just kind of grew from there. And that's where it all began.
Oh, so yeah, you just started to share bits of your story, and then it kept piling up, and you're realizing, no, this is a lot of stuff. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's one of the overriding themes of this podcast, is the power of story. And you have a very powerful story, and you're using that power to make huge change. And I think the more public we can make this idea about survivors of abuse, especially male survivors, I think that's going to really change the tide and help more men heal. And the more men who hear other men tell their story of abuse and survival, that they will be inspired to share. And that's what happened to me. I heard the Leaving Neverland documentary, and that inspired me on my own healing journey and getting to the point where I could share publicly. And then others have heard my story, and they're getting help. And people are hearing their story, and they're getting help. So it's just this snowball effect. Mm-hmm. And very excited to see how this goes with you. Q&A, I've got another one. Ed says, when you mentioned imposter syndrome, exactly, I felt my story was not important because I wasn't abused enough. That some people think, oh, well, I just had this little abuse and you have this big abuse, but like I say, it's not a contest, and it's all bad, and it all does so much damage
Trauma is all relative. You know, whether you've been through, like Ed said, you've been through one little thing, a small amount of abuse, or you've been through a large amount of abuse, it's all about how you deal with it. It's all about how you handle it. You know, I've been through what I've been through, and I've come out the other side. You can go through the smallest amount of abuse, it's the worst thing in the world, and you want to kill yourself, or you just want to, you know, it destroys you. So again, it's all about being able to just share your story with someone, because ultimately that's all we want, is for someone to listen to us, someone to hear us, someone to believe us, someone to support us and love us and hug us and kiss us and be there for us. That's what we want. So it doesn't matter how small or how big your story is. It's about talking about it, getting it out, finding that support system, and having them be able to just be there for you and help you through that journey and move forward in that journey. It doesn't matter how big the trauma is or the abuse is. It's about what you do with it. And you can let it destroy you, or you can let it empower you, get your power back, move forward, and grow and become the person you're supposed to become. That's what it's about.
Right. Another thing from Dan Carlson: I really identify with you on many points, mate. I finally stepped into the persona that had been kept locked away and fed on fear and shame and anger when I was 57, and dove into the fetish community as the dominant sadomasochist abuser of submissive men when I finally got my CPTSD diagnosed and began therapy. The concept of "it wasn't my fault" really began to be something I could understand. Much love to you, brother. I get it.
Absolutely. Yeah. No. I fell into that world too, of you know, the sex world. And for me, through the shame and the imposter syndrome and the self-sabotage, you know, I was trying to date women, but I would then sneak around and have sex with men from, like I said, from the earliest age of 15. I wanted these men to abuse me. I wanted these men to rape me. Half the time I wanted them to not wear a condom, and I wanted to catch something. I wanted to get AIDS. I wanted to die, because that's what I deserved. And that's
right.
That was who I was, or who I am. And, you know, like I said, that took over my life for a very long time. And touch wood, you know, I should be dead. I should be in jail. I should be on the street somewhere, but someone's looking out for me. Someone's watching over me, and someone's taking me on this journey. You know, that's something now that I'm embracing and moving forward with. And just what happened to me, it didn't kill me. And there's a reason why it didn't kill me. And it's to now share my story. It's to educate the world. It's to really create change and create something amazing.
Right. Yes, for sure. Got another response. I understand the anger you're talking about, how we take it out on the ones who love us the most. I feel so guilty about this. The patience our loved ones must have a place in heaven. I have a hard time forgiving myself, mood swings especially. Thank you so much for your transparency and courage.
Yeah, you know, like what's the saying says, you always hurt the ones you love the most. And you do, because they're the ones who care for you and want you to share and communicate and be vulnerable. But we don't want to do that until we're ready to do it. And I did it the same. You know, my family, and they would always ask me what is wrong and what's going on, because as a kid, or as a teenager, I would just sit at home and just cry and not talk to anyone. And my parents would ask, and my sister would ask, and all I would say is, you don't understand. You wouldn't understand. Don't worry about it. I'm okay. But in the meantime, I'm wanting to kill myself, and I'm wanting to just be alone and be depressed. And it's interesting, because the very first time I told my mother, after she asked her, you know, the who, the what, the when, the where questions, all of that stuff, the very first thing she said after that was, wow, that explains everything about you. Now I understand why you were the young boy that you were and the teenager, and you were so all over the place, and just the drugs and all of that. Now it all makes sense. But until I was able to be open and vulnerable and share, they were pulling their hair out going, what the fuck is wrong with this kid? What is wrong? We're trying to help, but he doesn't want the help. And I didn't want the help for a very long time until I was ready. And it took me a long time to be ready for it. So, you know, when I did, it changed my life. And now I have such a closer relationship with my parents and with my brothers and my sister. And, you know, right. Before I didn't. But now I love going to spend time with them. And, you know, I've got little niece and nephews, and they're my life. They're my heart. And you know, any chance I get to go back to Australia and see them, then that's that. They make it all worthwhile.
Right. Now, wanted to see, you're in the Hollywood realm. I know you're an actor and you're in LA pursuing getting your movie made and so forth. What is your opinion on all the latest Hollywood scandals, like with Nickelodeon and Drake Bell coming out, all these other celebrities?
It's tough because it's all about money and power, and it's all about saving face. So, you know, what I find the most disappointing about all of this is how many actors or celebrities are coming out and supporting the abuser and saying they're okay and saying they're good people and saying it's a lie because they don't want to lose a job or they don't want to, you know, upset the person because he's a big executive and he can get them a job or two. So I'm, as an actor, I'm going to say, well, what he did, it wasn't that bad, or it's not true or whatever, just to save face, so I can get my next acting job or whatever the situation was, or because I did a job with him a few years ago and I thought he was a good person. That's what I find most disappointing, is you really learn who these people are and what's important to them and where their values lie. And a lot of them don't care, because when my memoir came out, my PR and management team at the time would go to these media outlets, to a lot of media outlets, and say, here's this amazing book or whatever the situation is. And 95% of the time, the media would say, if Nathan was a woman, we would talk to him today. Because he's a man, we're not going to talk to him, because we don't want to talk about male sexual abuse. We're going to pretend male sexual abuse doesn't exist. That's what's wrong with the world today, is that we need to change that. We need to start educating these people, because it's still such a taboo subject. It's still such a stigma surrounding male sexual abuse. And let's just pretend it doesn't exist and move forward.
Yeah, I'm so thankful for Drake Bell and Anthony Edwards and all those other celebrities who have come out in the past few years, since really the Me Too movement, talking about their abuse openly, because that's how other men realize they're not alone. It's like I said earlier, the power of story. Yep. So I'm very thankful about that. And I know also we had Craig Hiding on the podcast recently, and he mentioned his play Guilt, which I know you guys just did a read through, and you play the Craig character, the character that's based on his life. So how did that go? And what is the plans moving forward for that play?
Went very well. I had the lead. I play Craig, and what it's about is a man who is trying to, or he doesn't have much of a relationship with his wife and his daughter, and he can't open up and he can't communicate and he can't tell them what happened to him, and he has these memories come back and about his past and stuff, and he finally opens up at the very end. It went really well. We are now, hopefully we have a grant and we are able to move forward with it, but we're looking for producers when we're looking for a theater, so that we can put it up and go on a run and do it here. And then hopefully we can take it to New York and take it to other places and really, get it out there. And because it's a great play, it's very well written. But, you know, just like any movie, doing a play is just as hard as well, because it's all about money. It's all about finding those investors who want to invest in a story like this. But we're very optimistic and we've got some good people on board now. And hopefully it happens and it works out.
Now, how was it for you going through the script and playing this character, knowing that so much of it paralleled your own journey?
You know, it's fine, because people ask me about my script, my movie script as well. And what I tell them and what I've come to realize is I've done so much work on myself, and I'm continuing to do the work. It's an everyday thing. It's not like I do 6 months of therapy and then I'm all healed. I'm continuing to do all this work on myself that I understand it. I understand how it works. It doesn't trigger me anymore. Like, I don't read something and I fall to the floor and end up in a corner just shaking. That doesn't happen anymore. It can be a little exhausting sometimes. But for me now, I understand it, and I enjoy telling these stories. I enjoy being a part of it because I understand it and I understand the impact it can make. So I want to make sure these stories are told correctly. So that's really important to me is getting these stories out and telling them the right way.
Excellent. But is it helping your healing process as well?
It does. I learn every day from it, and I grow, and I get to understand a bit more. And what I loved about group therapy was hearing everyone else's stories, because it wasn't my story, but I could relate to so much of it, just like you with my book and other people with my book. Telling one story or listening to someone else's story, it's very much therapeutic, because you are learning so much from everyone else and what they went through and how they handled it and how they felt. And you're like, oh yes, I did that. I felt that. I went through the same thing. So it's great. I find it all very therapeutic and very learning, and I really enjoy that process.
Yes, I know I've mentioned on the podcast on previous episodes that artistic expression is a very right-brained activity, and trauma is stored in the right brain. And so oftentimes, if you're expressing yourself artistically, you can often tap into that part of the brain that experienced the trauma and help to release it in different ways that you couldn't otherwise through non-artistic expression. So I'm wondering, the fact that you are playing these characters and playing these words, but also trying to understand that character as well. And that's a whole big, I've been into drama as well, so I know there's a whole process of trying to understand the character and then expressing and so forth and tapping into those emotions and so forth so you can properly portray that. I'm wondering if you are tapping into those traumas as well.
I am. Yeah, when I act and when I'm creating a character or when I'm reading a script, I always bring my past traumas into it, because that allows me to then go there and go deep and really portray this character and really put the words on the page with real heart and real depth and real life. Instead of just reading the words, I can feel the words. I can feel the character. I know what he's gone through, and I bring my past to it, my memories. Yeah, it makes for a better performance. It makes for a better understanding.
Wonderful. We've got a few more questions. Nathan, thanks for everything you've done and continue to do. Excellent TED Talk. Really appreciate your outlook on life, and thanks for speaking truth. And I will amen to that for sure. And we have another follow-up from Ed. By telling my story, he says, I discovered I was actually significantly abused, but I tucked it away. So just by the process of telling the story, it unlocked more memories for him. Did you experience anything like that as well as you continued on your journey, telling your story and now writing the documentary and so forth?
Every time you tell your story, every time something comes up, every time you speak about it, not always, I should say, but a lot of the times other memories would come or other things would show up or I'd feel or I'd hear or I'd remember or I'd, you know, it's always a journey of self-discovery. And sometimes you'll discover a lot more when you tell one side of the story, and sometimes you won't discover as much. So it all just depends on where you're at and what part of the story you're telling and stuff like that. So yes, for me, sometimes I discovered a lot. Other times it was just that.
I did want to ask, you mentioned relationships a lot in your book and so forth. Where are you now in that journey? Do you currently have any relationships going on?
I'm single at the moment. I'm single and I'm open to it, and I'm open to it. I'd love to meet with someone. I'd love to be in a relationship, but right now I'm comfortable with being alone, because I've just got so much work going on and you know, I'm growing every day. So, you know, when I do meet that person, hopefully it's right and I'm ready to open up and really give everything to them.
Right. That sounds wonderful. And look forward to getting more information about where you're going with all of this information with the documentary. I just watched the trailer for that. That looks very fascinating. And the upcoming movie that I'm excited to hear more about as well.
With everyone, once I know things and once things come out and things are, I'm happy to share it with you and on my social media and
definitely look forward to that. Any closing thoughts, Nathan?
Oh, it's just, you know, it's always nice to be here. And, you know, you and I have known each other for a while now and have spoken, and it's just nice to do this with you and be a part of this community and to really, you know, help those who don't have a voice and facilitate their healing journey. And if I can do that, if I can be a part of that, then what an amazing legacy to leave. So I'm, you know, I'm happy to be here and I'm happy to do this. And let's do it again in another 6 months or another year. And when things have evolved and when the movie's out and the documentary and all that stuff, and we can talk more.
We're thrilled to have you back. Thank you so much for sharing your story, Nathan. And again, if you would like to join us on this podcast on future episodes, feel free to go to my website, polarlifeconsulting.com/live. If you would like to learn more about my coaching with Polar Life Consulting, where I provide one-on-one coaching and group coaching, both with a focus on healing for male survivors, reach out to me at polarlifeconsulting.com. That is polar spelled P-O-L-A-R. I would love to hear from you. I want to hear your story. If you would like your story featured on this podcast, contact me via my website. If you like this podcast, please rate and review, because that's how other people can find me, and I really want to spread this message of healing and hope to others. And remember, you are not alone. Healing is possible, and the abuse was not your fault. Let me repeat that. The abuse was not your fault. See you next time on the Healing for Male Survivors podcast.